Pastor Dave Rolfe has us consider a very important question today.
How much is really sufficient? Because if we can't answer that question and we don't know where to draw that line, we're going to find ourselves on an endless treadmill of trying to get more and more and more. And ultimately, that pursuit will destroy us. That pursuit will eat us up and we'll never be satisfied. So when God has blessed us, an important question for us to ask regularly to ourselves is, when is it enough?
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
How much is enough? Most of us think we'd be finally satisfied if we had a little bit more. A bigger house, a better car, and higher salary. But if we're given a little bit more, so many of us will want even more. If we're wise, we'll aim for godliness with contentment. Today on The Balanced Word, that's a lesson we'll glean from 2 Chronicles chapter 9. Solomon's lifestyle proves that even if we have it all by the world's standard, it really doesn't satisfy. It's by living a life that pleases God that we find true fulfillment. Here's Pastor Dave Rolfe.
Chapter 9 begins to lay out how successful Solomon really was. You remember, God told him, I'll give you whatever you ask for. And so he asked for wisdom, and God said, boy, that was the right thing to ask for. And because you ask for the right thing, I'm going to give you wisdom more than anyone else ever has. But not only that, I'm also going to make you wealthy and powerful and do everything else for you. Just, I'm going to shower my blessings on you. For the sake of your father David, and because, well, you asked for the right thing when I gave you the opportunity to ask. And so here in chapter 9, we see the Queen of Sheba coming to visit Solomon. It says in other places that people, rulers from all over the world, just couldn't wait to come and meet Solomon because of the incredible wealth that he had, because of the amazing wisdom that he possessed. They would come and ask him questions, and he would just give them answers that blew them away. And so the Queen of Sheba is one of those people. Now, we don't know where Sheba is. Tradition says that it's Ethiopia, that this gal was actually coming from Ethiopia and was a queen or a princess from Ethiopia. Ethiopia is in Africa, down below. If you're coming down from Israel, you have Egypt there in northern Africa. You go down a little further and you have the Sudan. And then Ethiopia is down below the Sudan. So it's like in the central part of Africa, just Somalia is there on the coast and Ethiopia is there just a little above Kenya and the rest of Central Africa. So it would be quite a journey. And you get the idea that this woman came from quite a ways away. And it says, now when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to Jerusalem to test Solomon with hard questions, having a very great retinue, camels that bore spices, gold in abundance, and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for Solomon that he could not explain it to her. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters and their apparel, his cupbearers and their apparel, and his entryway by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. She came, this feisty gal, a ruler from a long ways away, brought a lot of people with her thinking, I'm going to find out if this guy's for real. I want to see if he's everything that they say he is. And she came, and after he answered all her questions, and then she saw all of the people that were serving him and all of the wealth that he possessed, it like took her breath away. It took the spirit out of her. She was no longer challenging, but she was just in awe of what she saw there in Jerusalem. Then she said to the king, it was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe their words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half of the greatness of your wisdom was not told me. You exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men, and happy are these your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you, setting you on his throne to be king for the Lord your God. Because your God has loved Israel to establish them forever, therefore he made you king over them to do justice and righteousness. And again, what a wonderful compliment to say God put you in charge because he loves these people so much. God has such an affection for his own people, the children of Israel. And that's why he chose you. A great compliment that she paid to him. And she gave the king 120 talents of gold, spices in great abundance, and precious stones. There never were any spices such as those the queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. 120 talents of gold. One talent of gold was 3,000 shekels. A shekel was a day's wage. So one talent was the equivalent to one person working for over 8 years. So she gave him a lot of money. And it says that not only that, the servants of Hiram and the servants of Solomon who brought gold from Ophir brought algum wood and precious stones, and the king made walkways of the algum wood for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, harps, stringed instruments for singers, and there were none such as these seen before in the land of Judah. Now King Solomon gave to the queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, much more than she had brought to the king. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. The queen of Sheba, again, we don't know who she is for sure. The Ethiopians, though, have stories going way back, ancient stories of a queen that they had named Magda who went and visited Solomon and saw his riches and tested him for his wisdom. Again, the Bible doesn't tip us off as to this, but they have an interesting story that goes along with this, and I don't know if it's true or not. It seems rather fanciful when you read it in all the details. But the bottom line is, from what they said, the queen of Sheba, Magda, this queen from Ethiopia, traveled up to Israel, spent a lot of time there with Solomon. And before she left to go back to her land, she wanted to stay there, they say, but she brought so many people with her and, you know, she left a country back home. And so before she went, she actually slept with Solomon. Solomon impregnated her, and she went back to Ethiopia and bore Solomon's child, who was named David. And as a result, there's a whole group of people, there are a whole group of people in Ethiopia that trace themselves back to Judaism. And it's difficult to, if there wasn't some connection, it's hard to understand where they got all that Judaism in the middle of Ethiopia. Not only that, Ethiopia was one of the countries in Africa more than any others that just gravitated to the gospel. One reason many people have suggested is because of their early experiences by having someone who was the heir to Solomon, really, and from the seed of David, who was one of their leaders. And so this is something that the people in Ethiopia believe to this day, and they have very ancient sources to suggest it and a very detailed account of how this supposedly happened. Another interesting thing is when later on, when Jerusalem was under siege and was destroyed, and the temple was destroyed, the Ark of the Covenant disappeared. And no one really knows where it is. Indiana Jones says it's in Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian, but no one knows where it is, although the Ethiopians claim that it was taken to Ethiopia. Now, that there are many Ethiopians today that say they have it to this day and are waiting for the time when the temple will be rebuilt and it will resurface. Interesting possibility. I don't know if it's true. The Ethiopians certainly have an immense amount of knowledge about the temple and temple ritual, and they have many instruments that appear to be very ancient that would have gone along with the temple worship. And so, again, it would make sense if you wanted to get the ark off somewhere distant, somewhere safe and secure, you'd get it out of the Middle East, and perhaps it was taken down there to Ethiopia. And if so, it may all tie in with this connection with the Queen of Sheba. I just tell you that because it's an interesting possibility. Don't know if it's true or not. Could be not true, and yet with what we know about Solomon, it would hardly be a earth-shattering scandal to find out that he impregnated a foreign ruler. He did that as a hobby pretty much throughout his life. And so, interesting story. Now we go on in the chapter to talk about Solomon's wealth further. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold. 666 times 3,000 days' wages, add that up in today's currency, a huge amount of gold that was brought to Solomon basically from taxation every year. It's a lot. And it's interesting to go on, besides what the traveling merchants and traders brought, and all the kings of Arabia and governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. So not only this 666 talents of gold, that was kind of his base pay, and then he had all sorts of gold added in. Now, you may notice that number 666. Interesting. Interesting to me especially because it wasn't really the total. It's almost like he segmented off 666 talents of gold and then said, and there was a bunch of other gold also. What does that mean? You know, in the book of Revelation, the Antichrist is identified by his number, 666. People speculate as to what the significance of that is. I don't know. I just think it's interesting that this is the only other place in the Bible where the number 666 comes up, and it seems almost to be plugged into the story, really. It seems to be more than just random, not exactly a round number. Six, of course, is the number of man, and so the Antichrist is thought to be the one who's the best that man has to offer. That would be interesting when you consider Solomon also the best that the perfect man other than Jesus Christ, the best that earthly man could accomplish apart from God. But I'll leave Chuck Missler to teach for hours on that. I just think it's interesting. Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 shekels of hammered gold went into each shield. And then he made 300 smaller ones. 300 shekels of gold went into each of these shields. He put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. And it goes on to describe the majesty of his kingdom. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. Wow. The throne had six steps with a footstool of gold, which were fastened to the throne. There were armrests on either side of the place of the seat. Two lions stood between the armrests. 12 lions stood there, one on each side of the six steps. Nothing like this had been made for any other kingdom. All King Solomon's drinking vessels were gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Not one was silver, for this was accounted as nothing in the days of Solomon. No silver for me. For the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Tyre. Once every 3 years, they came and brought gold, silver, ivory, apes, and monkeys. So King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. Each man brought his present, articles of silver and gold, garments, armor, spices, horses, mules, at a set rate year by year. Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots. Can you imagine? 12,000 horsemen whom he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king of Jerusalem. So he reigned over all the kings from the river, that is the Euphrates, to the land of the Philistines. That is, the land of the Philistines is there on the Mediterranean, as far as the border of Egypt, all that way south. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones, and he made cedar trees as abundant as the sycamores which are in the lowland. And they brought horses to Solomon from Egypt and from all lands. amazing. You can understand why the Queen of Sheba, when she came, her breath was taken away. Her spirit was just knocked out of her when she saw this incredible wealth of Solomon. And God had promised that he would bless Solomon, that he would make him wealthy as well as wise. But we see in this chapter the extent to which people just came to kiss up to him, to give him gifts. It's kind of funny how when people are really rich, everyone wants to give them stuff. You know, you'd think you'd want to give things to poor people, but the truth is if you don't need it, you're more likely to get it for free. But here we see in Solomon a lifestyle that was just extremely extravagant. And it stands in contrast to what we read. In fact, turn over to Deuteronomy 17. This would be a good time for us to be reminded of how God said kings ought to conduct themselves. Deuteronomy chapter 17, beginning with verse 14. Now keep in mind what you just read. Solomon having all this gold, having all these people serving him, giving him things, just extravagance beyond measure, just that blew away even other rulers. All these horses and chariots. And now here's what God says kings ought to do. He said in verse 14, when you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. God didn't want them to have a king. He told them not to. When Saul became king, Samuel was begging the people, please don't do this. But they were insisting. Everybody else has a king, so we want a king. So God says in verse 15, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your brethren you shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. But, and here's the reason why this was a problem, having an earthly king. He shall not multiply horses for himself. Whoops, Solomon. Nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. Whoops. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself. Whoops. Lest his heart turn away. Yep. Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. Uh-oh. Also it shall be when he sits on the throne of the kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book. And it shall be with him, verse 19, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. Wow. Seems like Solomon, the greatest king ever, did everything that God said, don't do this if you're a king. And the reason God gives is obvious. You don't want leaders to put themselves above the people. You don't want there to be this dual class sort of thing where you have the elite up here and then you have all the other people whose existence is there just to take care of the leader, just to bless the leader. Everything that God said a king shouldn't be, Solomon became, and we see it all here in this chapter. But it's an important question that I think we all have to ask ourselves, because as people living here in the United States, living in Orange County, most of us have been blessed beyond what the bare minimum is required to live on. I mean, God's been good to us. And I don't think we should be ashamed that God has been good to us. He promises that to us and in many different ways as he'll bless us if we follow him and obey him, even as he had to Solomon. And so I don't think we have to apologize that God is blessing us. But the question comes, when is enough enough? How much is really sufficient? Because if we can't answer that question and we don't know where to draw that line, we're going to find ourselves on an endless treadmill of trying to get more and more and more. And ultimately, that pursuit will destroy us. That pursuit will eat us up and we'll never be satisfied. So when God has blessed us, an important question for us to ask regularly to ourselves is, When is it enough? When is it time to downsize a little bit? Is it always just that the bigger house you can get, the bigger house you should get? Is it always that, well, the nicest car you can afford, that's the car you ought to have? Is it always that, well, if I have space in my closet, it must be God telling me to buy more clothes? And, you know, you can always make space in your closet, so that's an endless thing. For guys, if there's a shelf in your garage, does that mean you need a tool to fill that space? And over again, we see, boy, I never have enough. I never know when to say, okay, this is good. This is sufficient. I'm okay. And as a result, like Solomon, there's a huge danger that those things that we possess will end up possessing us, will end up devouring us and destroying us. So much of the Bible, Old and New Testament, warns against that endless pursuit of more and more and more. And if we think that we're not susceptible to it, we're fooling ourselves. It's a shame when God has blessed us and we don't know what to do with that with which he has blessed us. We don't know how to give or to disperse what he gave us. God blessed Solomon because he wanted to bless the people. And the Queen of Sheba was right. God loved the people, and so he gave them you because you are so blessed. You have that Midas touch. You have that capacity and ability, that knowledge and understanding that few people have. And Solomon had an opportunity to bless those people. It's what God wanted to do. But instead, he just blessed himself more and more. He just attracted money and possessions and relationships as much as he could get. Solomon never got to the point where he had enough. The Bible tells us that, Paul told Timothy, godliness with contentment is great gain. And unless we are content where we are right now, we're never going to become content when we get more. It's really a horrible trap.
Pastor Dave Rolfe reminding us of our call to contentment, and then to spend, save, and give in a God-honoring fashion. This is The Balanced Word, and boy, does this ninth chapter of 2 Chronicles speak loudly to us and our society today. We're prone to act selfishly, like Solomon, and it's so easy to get caught up in the pursuit of more and more. But the Bible repeatedly warns us that's a futile endeavor. We're to pursue Christ in godliness instead. Stick around, Dave has a bit more to say. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. Again, thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475 or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. So thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com or again call 949-362-7475. Have you seen Pastor Dave's one-minute messages? Watch and listen to those at thebalancedword.com and even join our mailing list so you can have them delivered to you each day. You can also watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday service at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. Now here's Pastor Dave with some concluding thoughts about the endless pursuit for more.
Today, the mentality so often is, I decide what I need, and now I'm going to figure out how to pay for it. And that's how we get stuck. That's how we get in trouble. And it's the appeal of the world that convinces us to do things for which God hasn't provided. And if we're buying things that we really can't afford, we're already showing, and even it might be, oh, come on, I need a car, I need a, you know, but if we're spending more money than we're taking in, It's not a sign that God hasn't provided for us. It's a sign that we're extending ourselves. We can call it faith. We can call it whatever we want. We can convince ourselves that, well, yeah, but in a few years, everything's going to be straightened out and everything's going to be fine. But the problem is for each of us, and this is a greater responsibility for people the more they have. How much of what God gave you do you really think he gave you for you to consume, to spend on yourself? And how much of what he gave you is he giving you so that you can use it in ways that will bless others or that will allow the gospel to be spread?
A good question there as we close. And we'll pick things up from this point tomorrow on The Balanced Word as we continue our study of 2 Chronicles with Pastor Dave.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.